This is Pulp Brother, or should I call him Javier? That's his real name. Javier is, in every sense, the quintessential artist. At 63, his days are a dream many would envy. He wakes up with the sunrise, swims in the ocean, then heads home to paint. Some days the canvas fills with colors and life, and on others it sits blank. But either way, he's doing what he loves more than anything, painting. And remarkably, he's making a living doing just that. But for Javier, this life was never a given. In fact, for much of his journey, it felt completely out of reach. For decades, he poured his energy into something else entirely, working as hard as he could to support his family. Painting for him wasn't ever a career, it was just a dream. Until one day, everything changed. I'm Jacob Johnson. This is the My Art Is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Pulp Brother, right after the break. This episode would not be possible without you, the listener. If you enjoy this show, share it with everyone you know and leave a review wherever you listen to the podcast. If you would like to take your support a step further, head on over to myartisrael.com and collect one of our limited edition art prints. By collecting a print, you're not only getting a limited edition beautiful print, but you're also supporting me and supporting the artist directly. Thank you so much for listening, and back to the episode. Pulp Brother is just a username. Who's the man behind that username?
My name is Javier Mayoral. I am in Spain, and I'm a painter.
And where in Spain are you from?
I'm originally born in the northwest part of Spain. That's where I was born, by the Atlantic Ocean. But we moved when I was 2 years old to Madrid. So pretty much I consider myself, when they ask me, instead of, you know, going through the motion to explain where I'm from, I just tell them that I'm not only that. I used to spend summers in Galicia. That's where I'm from. All the kids, they used to call me the Madrileño, the guy from Madrid. So I said, okay, they made it easy for me, I guess. So I love the Northwest, and it's very cold. It's kind of like England or Ireland, that part. It's not the dry Spain that most people take for granted. I was brought up and I grew up in Madrid, and it's a big city. It's an old city.
Growing up in Spain wasn't easy for Javier. His childhood unfolded under the shadow of Francisco Franco's dictatorship, a time when freedom of expression was stifled and creativity often had to navigate through a maze of silence and fear.
It's hard to believe. I was born in 1961, so this, and I just find myself with, you know, that I'm 60. I just turned 63 fucking years old. At the time, you know, in the 60s, Franco, the dictator, was still in power. And, you know, Spain, after the Civil War, lost not only the Industrial Revolution, but the Cultural Revolution. So, you know, the Catholic Church, military people, they were in charge. And most of the talented people, they left to France, England, Germany, Portugal. So it was, but at the same time, you know, I grabbed a lot of that censorship and that you have to, you know, appearances and, you know, so I kind of learned to go around those things. And I think my sense of humor, it's rooted in, you know, in that dictatorship that happened in Spain, you know, until 1975 that the guy died. But again, I wouldn't change myself for anybody else. I love my country, very proud.
Franco's dictatorship oppressed and censored an entire nation. But even in those stifling times, some found ways to access forbidden books, ideas, and inspiration from the outside world.
The books were censored. If you could get them, they were censored. You know, movies, they were not only censored, but they were dubbed. And that's something, and that's why people from Spain, they don't speak English, because American movies or foreign movies, they are all dubbed. The internet wasn't around, obviously, at the time. So we had to, and I was lucky that, you know, my father was a very open person. You know, we used to go to the south of France to, you know, watch French movies and, you know, stuff. So I was exposed. Yeah, they were Republicans. They were I wouldn't say left-wing people, but they were like liberals, to put it that way, but kept an amazing library. I mean, they had like, before this war, like historical novels, and, you know, like I read Russian authors and, you know, French authors and English, American. So I was lucky that my family had that avenue, because in my case, you know, they were pretty liberal parents. So they had encyclopedias. Another thing that they did, it was just now thinking about it, so time passed by for so long ago it was, but it was fun because, you know, it was the challenging, what can I do? Or, you know, it was kind of twisting the, trying to get away with it, you know? But yeah, I got myself in trouble many, many times with, you know, with politics and stuff, yeah.
For Javier, it wasn't a question of if he would create art. From the moment he was born, it felt like he was compelled to make it, like it was written into his DNA.
And it's been something that it's, I was born with it, to be honest with you. When I was, my mom explained it really well. She said, when you were able to hold a pencil in your hands, that's, so, you know, I was 4 years old, 5 years old. My mom always told me that my brothers, they, you know, they went into soccer and, you know, like regular games. But to me, it was like, you know, when I saw an art supply store, remember, it was, that's all I wanted. So, and I was lucky that, yeah, my parents were very nurturing and very, they actually made sure that, you know, that I had an interest in something. So they were promoting it and making sure that I, you know, that I had the tools that I needed to develop my creativity.
And did anyone else in your family share that creativity? Were there other artists, you know, were your parents artists or anything?
No, it's that's another story. But yeah, my dad, he was starting to be an architect. Yeah, his dad died. He was the older male in the family. He had 8 sisters older than him. But being the, you know, that gives you an idea what type of country was that. He said, you know, it's like very, very well. They had a lot of money, but it was coming in. And when my grandfather died, they realized that they had no, they needed the income that he was generating at the time. So, yeah, he had to quit his studies, and then he had to move to Madrid to a school for orphans and stuff. So, you know, his upbringing was pretty, pretty harsh, although his sense of humor was incredible. And he was just, you know, and I think I have that dedication and discipline that I have. It's because I saw him working his ass all his life.
As Javier got older, of course, there was a question of what comes next. Should he continue his education? Here in America, where I live, we have trade schools. These specialty programs that teach specific skills, like, say, welding, for example, and they get you into the workforce pretty quickly. Fortunately for Javier, Spain had something similar, but for art.
The thing about the schools, I went to what can be categorized as a trade school for arts. It's Colegio de Artes Aplicadas, and it's like a branch of the School of Fine Arts, but it's more applied to, you know, like professional careers in art-related professions, like, you know, graphic designers, decorators, stage, you know, production, you know, that type of... It was not the career that you have in art school here that you have to attend a whole semester, a whole term, and it was more of a pick and choose, and you can travel and come back, and that's what I did for quite some time until I was done with school 4 years later. They get me hooked with an advertising agency, and then I was working graphic design, and that's where I learned a lot of, you know, my color choices, the, you know, the economy of my when I go to other painters' houses or studios, they have like thousands of color brushes, and I have a very reduced, you know, palette. My style is recognizable, and it's, and again, I'm not trying to convince anyone, you know, I just have the ability to, I consider myself a writer. In order for me to express my ideas, I'm lucky, you know, those ideas that are floating, I can grab them and, you know, with a little piece of wood and some brushes and paint, I can actually put them down and, you know, instead of having to write. And that's why there's a lot of text in my paintings too.
What was it like working for them? Did you enjoy the job or was it just a means to an end?
I enjoyed a lot. Yeah, I learned a lot and I was touching. Well, I started sweeping the floors, to be honest with you, when I started. But so I was doing, it was the times before computers. There was no computer at all, you know, so it was all handmade. So I immersed myself in copywriting, art direction, illustration, everything. And the good thing about that job is that enabled for me to work very hard for 3 or 4 months, make a lot of money, and then I could actually grab everything and travel. And then when I needed more money, I knew that I had the possibility to go, not only to go back to where the main agency was in Madrid, but they had agencies in Barcelona and in other cities. So I just, when I needed, you know, money, I just, hey, I'm here. What do you have for me? They always had something for me, I guess. Yeah.
Traveling was something Javier had always been drawn to, almost as if it ran through his veins, much like his love for art.
The people, and they have that in my blood. The people from Galicia, it's right now it's very rich because they have amazing seafood and the landscape, it's gorgeous and people are flocking. They discover what Galicia is. It's an amazing place. The people from Galicia, you can find, you know, I've been in many places and I always find somebody that is from Galicia, you know, it's like, so we have that in our blood. It's like, we are immigrants. My dad always told me that because he had to take care of his sisters and his family, being the older, that's one of the things that he traveled a lot later in life when he was successful at what he was doing. So he traveled a lot, but he said, oh God, I wish I had, I had traveled more. My brother, the same thing. He has lived everywhere. Right now, he just moved to the Philippines. So we have that in our blood.
It was then during his journey that he would meet someone, a woman, who would change everything. He fell in love, but there was one big problem.
It's another long story because I was probably 18 or 19. She was 15, and she was my best friend's girlfriend. I was in Barcelona and Miguel, my friend, he said, oh, I have a new girlfriend in Ibiza. Do you want to? I said, Ibiza is a place that I love. It's an island. When I saw her, I fell in love with her instantly. The only thing, it's totally off limits. She was my friend's girlfriend. So I said, no, I can't take this. So I just kept traveling, kept doing my thing. And they moved to Amsterdam and then he called me. I was in Barcelona at the time, yeah. And he said, hey, we are in Barcelona. And I said, yeah, come over. So they stayed with me. And the tension was unbearable. You know, I just, you know, it was like, wow. I kept traveling. 3 years later, I was in Madrid. And then, oh, we are here in Madrid. It happened that they didn't have a place to stay. So they stayed with me. And it got a little ugly in the sense that we just fell in love and she was married to the guy.
Javier tells me her parents were hippies, always on the move. And as a result of this, they never had bothered to actually secure her the proper paperwork for her to be a Spanish citizen. The easiest solution? She married Javier's best friend. And just like that, Javier found himself in an impossible situation. He was living under the same roof with the woman he secretly loved and his closest friend, who was also her husband. I can only imagine the tension he must have felt, constantly pushing down those feelings, must have been unbearable. During this time, him and his friend had even started a business together, and it was a pretty profitable business as well.
I created my own graphic design studio with my partner, which was the first husband of my ex-wife. And it was very successful because at the time we were doing book covers, record covers. We worked for a magazine. It was a very creative period.
Well, how's the business doing back then? Was it thriving?
And yeah, we were doing amazing. I mean, I had a bunch of stuff from the, and yeah, and they were magazines that they are, right now they are called icons for people in Spain, because that was the time when in Spain there was a lot of things happening, you know, music and, you know, Almodóvar came up and, you know, it was like what they call La Movida, which is, you know, it was everything happening. People from London, from Paris, they were moving to Madrid because it was cheaper and it was an amazing city at the time. You know, it was amazing. It was beautiful.
For someone like Javier, born to create, designing for companies was a good way to channel their creativity and also keep the bills paid. But as you've probably guessed by now, Javier's love for this woman was stronger than his need to keep the business going. Eventually, he and his best friend's wife fell in love. They ran away together, leaving behind everything they'd built, friends, family, the business, to start a new life together in New York City. Now, I'll admit, I don't know all the details of how it unfolded. Of course, I want to ask, but Javier's life is packed with one incredible story after another. To keep moving forward, I had to just skip over some questions and leave some of the mysteries untouched.
So yeah, I left all that. From one day to the other, we grabbed a plane and then we came to the States. So yeah, and I came to the States, I needed money and I didn't speak English at the time. I thought I did. At the moment I landed, I realized that I had no clue.
When Javier's dad had found out that he had left the business behind and moved to New York City, working odd jobs like making sandwiches and delivering Chinese food, he wasn't exactly thrilled. But how did Javier feel about it? When you landed in New York and found yourself delivering food, how did it feel in that moment? Were you discouraged? Or did you see it as just another step in your journey that you would eventually get where you need to be?
It was a shock. It was a shock because I started making sandwiches, but then I got a job for a Chinese restaurant in actually it's in Queens, not in, and I used to deliver food to this, one of the main delivery locations was the Bellevue Hospital, which is an hospital, an old Victorian building for the insane. So that was incredible. All the experiences that I had there delivering Chinese food were absolutely incredible, what I've seen there.
Of course, we all know that food delivery isn't exactly a lifelong career. It's more of a job, a way to get by. But soon enough, Javier found something new, a job he truly loved.
Yeah, one day I went to an art supply store and to get art supplies and all help wanted. And then they said, oh, right now we have the sign, but we are just interviewing people, but we'll let you know when we need you. And I went back home and I got a call. Hey, it's Dave Goldstein from Jerry's, the art store. Can you start tomorrow? And I said, I said, this is life changing. That was life changing for me because that's from being, delivering Chinese food. That's not what I wanted to, I didn't see a career path in there. So yeah, that opened up. And then, I started retail in the warehouse, loading boxes. And my work ethic, I guess it's different than most. So, my boss saw my dedication to what I, and I always did it with good disposition, and I wanted to help, and I was having fun, and I was surrounded by our supplies. I had discounts for our supplies and stuff. So to me, that was a dream job. So I kept growing in that company, And then, as I told you, when 4 years later, I just wanted to move to Arizona because my parents lived in Arizona. I said, okay. And I asked him and he said, yeah.
No matter the job, Javier always gave it everything he had. That relentless drive, that work ethic, has been the key to his success across so many different paths over the years. Eventually, he and his wife decided it was time to start a family. So they left New York behind and moved to Arizona, ready to begin a brand new chapter of their lives. Javier's life is a tapestry of compelling stories, traveling the world, working a variety of jobs, But through it all, one thing remained consistent, and that was his art.
I forgot a very important, there's an art fair in Madrid called Arco. It's a contemporary art fair. Before we moved, when I had the graphic design studio, I used to paint, but I used to paint abstract painting. And my ex-wife, she was the PR for, so she went to the fair and she showed my works to a gallerist, the very important gallerist at the time, Leo Castelli. He fell in love with the paintings. And he said, hey, come to New York, because, you know, I can do something for... But at the time, we were so successful with the graphic design studio that, to make long story short, instead of flying to New York like we should have, we waited a couple of years. And then when we finally arrived in New York, that I was doing the Chinese delivery, and she went to see Leo Castelli. He totally remembered her and remembered my art. And he said, oh, God, things have changed. It's been 2 years. It's been a long time. I'm still interested, but right now I don't have... Leo Castelli was probably the best gallery in New York at the time. Yeah. But in any case, he connected me with Nahum Gallery. I had a show in New York, but it was like... the old paintings, they were... abstract paintings at the time. Again, I didn't see, because it was inconsistent. You know, I had the show and then what? And then I saw my friends, they were like struggling, and I just didn't want to. And then we wanted to have kids. Sounds silly, but that's what we wanted to do. And New York was not the right place because, you know, there were lots of drugs around, and then the inconsistency of the income, you know, it was, yeah. So, Arizona was the perfect decision. We went to Phoenix.
Over the years, he had had some pretty interesting exhibitions and made good money along the way. At one of these shows, he had even earned $50,000 selling his works. A huge success by most artist standards, but as incredible as that was, it wasn't consistent work. So, with a family to support, art kind of had to take a backseat. For the time being, Javier continued working for an art supply company in Arizona, where he could stay connected to the creative world, even if it wasn't as a full-time artist. Then came along a big opportunity. One of the paint suppliers for the store he worked for approached him with a new job, this time out in California.
One sales rep that was sending oil paint from France, he came and he said, hey, they are looking for somebody like you in California. And that's, you know, so I lived 4 years in Phoenix. We bought a house in Phoenix. So when I moved to San Francisco, they helped me sell the house, which was amazing.
The company clearly believed in Javier. They helped him sell his home, facilitated his move, and eventually offered him an even bigger role, opening a new store for them in Miami. It was an exciting chance to grow professionally. But as it turned out, this move to Miami would be both a blessing and a curse.
2002, they offered me to come to Florida to expand the Florida and create the Florida market stores in Davie, in Palm Beach, in Miami. So I said, okay, yeah, let's do it. And then, as I said, it was an excuse too for our marriage to try to save it. So it was the opposite. So, yeah, she left for Seattle.
When she left him with their children. It was devastating, no doubt. But if there's one thing Javier values more than his art, it's his family. He took on the responsibility with everything he had, determined to give his children the best life he could. The art stores thrived for a while, bringing success and stability. But as it is so often the case, life took an unexpected turn and things began to unravel.
The company, the art store, it was very successful, but they started cannibalizing it with opening stores too close to each other in the city. And I said, oh, God, because we were growing 3-4% every year. And I said, this has to be, it's impossible that we keep these. And in fact, that's what happened. The investors starting to pull the plug. And then I got a call from my boss, George, and he said, Javier, we are closing the Florida operation. You pick and choose the market. You can go to New York. You can go to Boston. You can tell me and I'll pay for everything. And then it's, they have been so good to me. And I love the job, but I just wanted to, because I was repeating myself and I was painting on the side at the time. It's the perfect opportunity. I'm quitting. I'm not, no, just I had a 401k. I had a lot of money there. They gave me a good package when, you know, when I quit. So I spent 1 year just painting and doing nothing else. And but I had, you know, three boys that growing. So all the money in 1 year, I just ran out of money, man, like that.
Companies seem to value Javier's contributions, but by this point, moving again, especially on his own with three boys, just didn't feel right. After years of keeping his art on the back burner, he finally decided to pursue it full time. But as much as he poured his heart into it, it just wasn't enough to make ends meet. So he found himself back on the hunt for a day job, this time returning to the food industry.
Very good friend. He worked for a catering company. He came home and said, hey, how are you doing? I said, well, I'm not doing too good. It's like, I'm running out of money. You know, I just was pulling from my credit cards. And it was like a tough, but very exciting. I never got beaten up or too worried. I said, well, something will come. And he said, do you have any experience in hospitality? I said, well, I mean, when I was 17, 18, I bartended and, you know, I can make cocktails and stuff. No. This is a catering company. We have private parties and you're going to have to, you know, get the finger food to the guest and stuff. Nothing fancy. And I said, oh, whatever. I'll take whatever. So I started working for that catering company and just, you know, tips and stuff like that. One day, the bartender, I remember, it was in the Bass Museum, which is the contemporary art museum here in Miami. We had an event there, and the bartender got sick or got late or they fired. I don't know exactly what happened, but the boss, Anthony, say loud, anybody can bartend? And he said, yeah, I can do that. So they got me in the, you know, bartending. More money, less work, and it was fun. We had like a private events in the Versace mansion and, you know, the Bass Museums.
It was while bartending that Javier's path took yet another surprising turn. He met a couple who saw something in him and offered him an incredibly new opportunity.
So one night, a couple, an older couple, they came and they asked for a martini. I just served them a martini. And the guy said, you didn't ask me if it's vodka or gin. I said, no, you asked for a martini and martini. It's martini with gin. Oh, duh. So where are you from? They started talking. I mean, I was at the bar and they were like there and I was serving cocktails to other guests, but they seemed genuine and interested. So I kind of explained, you know, I mean, who I was and what I wanted to do. And I always loved cooking. I grew up cooking. My father was an amazing cook. My mother, even better, my grandfather. We grew up, the three brothers, helping in the house, doing the dishes, putting the table, setting the table. And then I was lucky that my dad always took us to really nice restaurants. And so I had a good palate. So even before I got the job, my friends, I used to love having friends over and cooking for them. And they said, my God, man, you need to open a restaurant. So when they asked me, that couple, I said, no, what I would really love is cooking. You know, I'm an artist, but, you know, it's something that, you know, I felt that there was like a commercial avenue there, more so than being a painter, you know, and at the time, chefs, they were not that, you know, at the time it wasn't, right now it's kind of like a glamorous type of show. But not at the time, no. So they said, okay, Yeah, we're looking for a chef. Well, yeah, if I know of anybody, I'll let you know. And they said, no. They gave me their business card.
He then found himself working as a private chef for a couple on Fisher Island, just off the coast of Miami. If you're not familiar, Fisher Island boasts the highest per capita income in the United States. It's home to the ultra wealthy, and this gig promised to be something truly special. The family loved his cooking, and over the years they helped him in more ways than one. While cooking was undoubtedly one of his passions, but let's not forget Javier's true love. Making art has always been his number one. Around this time, Javier met someone new, a woman who would soon become an important part of his life, and she had a knack for selling things on eBay and encouraged Javier to try listing some of his paintings.
I was painting on the side, and just to have an extra, because I like to, in the summers, I had 3 months that I didn't work. So in order just to, you know, the plane ticket, you know, for, you know, the whole family to go to Europe for 3 months, you know, that's. So I started selling my paintings on eBay. Because before, my wife, my now wife, she's a prop stylist for advertising. And she does a lot of vintage fashions. And she has very good eye. She just buys like Gucci stuff and Gucci and stuff like that and resells it. And there was an antique fair in Lincoln Road. And she said, I have a booth, but I have extra space. Why don't you hang some of your little paintings that I was painting them on? They were even smaller than what they are right now. And those paintings, again, I painted them just to keep myself busy. Friends loved them, so I gave them away, that type of deal. So I sold them all. So that's when we said, oh God, there's something in here, you know? So she had an eBay account selling clothes, and I started putting my paintings, and they were flying out there. I couldn't keep up.
What started out as a way to make some extra cash for family vacations quickly turned into a booming business. He was selling his paintings faster than he could make them. Then one day, he got a message from a collector.
And then one day I got a message from a customer that ended up he has 800 of my pieces. Okay. He's from Germany, Till Mette. And he said, I'm here in Rhode Island because my wife, she's a math teacher. She has, within a year here in Rhode Island at the university, but we're going back to Hamburg. But I have a friend in Florida, and I'm going to drive, say goodbye to him. Do you mind if I visit? And I said, yeah, come over. Yeah. That was 2014. He came. He saw it all. He started, like, promising me, okay, we're going to publish a book. We're going to give you a show in Berlin. And I was like, as I said earlier, people talk, but they don't deliver for the most part. And he left, and I was like, okay, what a nice guy, blah, blah, blah. I didn't give it too much thought. And then, like, a week later, I start getting emails from him with photo attachments. And I see a group of 8 people in the photo, and the floor of this big warehouse is plastered with color copies of my paintings. And that's when I said, oh, God, those guys are serious.
This wasn't just any collector. This person owned 800 of Javier's works. 800. Holy cow. That's actually pretty common, apparently, with collectors of his art. They tend to buy piece after piece, building massive collections. It's all thanks to the way Javier approaches his craft, the size of the paintings, and the way he prices them. Here's how it works. He paints primarily on wood. He goes out to the lumberyard or the hardware store, buys a sheet of plywood, then has it cut into smaller panels. Originally, he made them all 8x10-inch pieces, but one day, the guy cutting the wood suggested something. If Javier adjusted the size slightly to 8x9.5 inches, he wouldn't have a single bit of the plywood sheet left to waste. That tweak meant he could get exactly 60 panels out of one board. And from then on, that's the size he stuck with. As for its pricing, it's fluctuated over the years, and he eventually landed on $400 per piece. The price point has been perfect. It's accessible enough for newer, less experienced collectors to afford an original, while also allowing seasoned collectors to amass significant collections. Not every artist approaches selling their works this way, but I personally love it when they do. I hate the idea of art as some exclusive club reserved only for those with sky-high net worths. Art should be for everyone, no matter your social standing, and it's artists like Javier who makes this vision a reality. With an update from his German collector and their clear commitment to his work, Javier didn't hesitate, quickly bought a ticket and hopped on a plane heading to Germany.
Well, before I knew it, I got a plane ticket for me and Christina, my wife, to they published a book in Germany. I had the show opening in Berlin. They sent me to Hamburg. I went to Munich. Absolutely crazy. Then the next year, they sent me to Austria for another show in Austria. And at the time, I was juggling it. So from full-time chef, I went to 3 days a week. And then it got to a point that I just, and Linda, my boss, the lady that I was cooking for, she said, yeah, you're quitting. And I said, yeah, I just can't do this. So yeah, that was in 2014. I was in the right place at the right time. And the guy believed in me. He saw the potential and he delivered.
He's right. It was the right place at the right time. But that's not the whole story. He had been painting his entire life, steadily building a massive body of work, and it was that constant dedication and effort were what allowed him to seize that opportunity when it came his way. Now, he was flying all over the world, showing his art and traveling as much as he wanted. It sounds like paradise, doesn't it? During this time, what was your style of work looking like? How did it evolve through that time?
I started doing like Mexican-inspired paintings, like retablos and like Mexican wrestlers. In fact, a lot of people, they still think that I'm from Mexico. I'm not. But and it just evolved. I used lots of my dreams for inspiration. And then my family, my friends, they know what I'm doing and they are always giving me ideas. And then I keep my eyes open and I like to cross-reference things that I like. I like to cross-reference things that I don't like. It's therapy. I like to talk about things that people sometimes not necessarily are comfortable talking about, or they are afraid to be ridiculed by talking about those. To me, again, all those images that are in my brain, without this outlet, I would definitely go crazy. I know that.
I totally get it. I feel the same way. When I have too many ideas swirling around in my head and no creative outlet, it's like I'm going to explode. He paints the things he loves, the movies that inspire him as early influences, and sometimes he even paints the things he doesn't like.
It's funny because I just came back from Paris and the people were like, oh God, we were expecting for you to be dressed in leather and this and that, you know? So I always tell my paintings are and are not are autobiographical because sometimes, you know, and things I love, things I hate, things that interest me, things I grew up and I people I admire, people I despise. One thing I don't like, I do it, but very without taking part or taking sides. I don't get in politics. I get a lot of message, oh no, you should take sides and you should, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
When you're out there and you're seeing these people at your shows connecting with your work, how does that make you feel?
Man, I spend the day painting. I'm a hermit. I just go to the beach in the morning and then paint the whole day, you know? So when I go out and, you know, I had this show in Mexico, I had the show in Paris, in Provincetown, and I see people waiting in line to meet me and how much my paintings are part of their, to me, it's and it's very young people, you know, I'm not a young kid anymore, you know, Yeah, my son, he's 24. He came like 3 months ago. And he said, "Dad, I went to this concert and this gorgeous girl, she came and, you know, it was, and then she grabbed her phone. Oh, do you know this artist?" And he's like, "Yeah, he's my dad." It's like, and of course she didn't believe him. He's like, yeah, right. So yeah. And it's funny because she came home and, you know, I see them there. I mean, starstruck. It's like, I feel like a rock star. It's like fucking crazy. It's incredible. Incredible. Yeah.
The way I discovered Javier's art and the way many of his fans found him was through Instagram. But funny enough, he didn't even want to start an Instagram to begin with.
Instagram, I've been on Instagram for 6-7 years. And the reason I opened Instagram is my kids. They said, "Dad, you should..." To me, Instagram was like girls twerking and videos. And so I said, no, I don't want to do that. And he said, "No, let us..." So they just opened the account. And I spent 2 years with 300 followers. And I was as happy as you can. I was like, "Oh, God, 300 people love my stuff." And then one morning I woke up and I had 12,000. I thought it was a glitch. I had to turn the phone off and on because I said, "No, this is a glitch." So when I turned the phone on, 12,000, I said, "Oh, fuck, what happened?" And then I realized there was this magazine in Australia. They had like, I don't even remember, but they had like millions of followers. They did a story about my art and that was it. And you have a lot of followers too, but you know that once you get 12, you get to 20, 40, 50, 70. I haven't done anything special, nothing. I haven't shown my face. I don't work for people, you know that. So I just kept doing it my way. And I find myself with 300 plus followers, 300,000. So it's like... which to me is what keeps me, because I have my website linked to my Instagram and that's how I sell. That's it. As simple as that.
It's always a good day when the art wins, when it beats the algorithm and reaches the people who truly need it the most. Okay, I have to ask, the name of your account, Pulp Brother, where does that come from?
Always want to... When I was doing eBay, I was the account for my paintings was Monster Party. It was the account that my wife had. Okay, how can I explain? Let me see. In the old house where you used to live, I was doing eBay, selling my stuff. There was an old guy that lived in the penthouse in an old apartment building. And he had been there for 60 years, and somebody bought the building and they were kicking him out. They were offering him another place, but they were kicking him out because they were remodeling. It's an Art Deco, beautiful apartment building here in Miami. So they had a garage sale. So we went and we saw amazing things. And how much? No, I'm not selling that. How much? It got to a point that I said, "So it's a garage sale of things that you don't sell?" It's like, and it was a very old guy, very, very eccentric collector. But he had this guy that was helping him with the garage sale. And he explained to us, he said, "No, he's in denial because they are kicking him out pretty much. So if anything that he doesn't sell, it's gonna go to the dumpster."
So they kept at it, pushing, trying to see what this guy would be willing to part with.
So then we kept, "How about this record?" "No, not for sale." I said, "Okay, fine, goodbye." And then we went home, and then the guy that was helping, he came and said, "Oh, I convince him. Come tomorrow and you can take a look." And that was it. We he trusted us. So it was kind of difficult to deal with him because he didn't want to, because he loved, and his collections were like engravings from the 16th century and then original posters from the Rat Pack that lived in Miami in the 40s. And absolutely mind-boggling, the collection that he was a hoarder. But of amazing stuff.
They gave it one more shot, trying to reason with him.
So I said to him, Alan, that was his name, and said, "Sir, you have two choices. Either sell that to us Because if you don't, everything is going to go down to that dumpster. And guess what? I'm going to be the first one in that dumpster tomorrow, and I'm going to grab for free. So that open, I remember the way he looked, and he said, oh, God, that makes sense. So, yeah, it was a race against time because the workers, we had 2 days to empty the place. Luckily, we live very close. So what we did is just grab everything he had and get it in. We had like a room where we loaded everything and edit everything. We got rid of a bunch of stuff that was in bad shape or it was worthless.
One particular interesting item they picked up was an old dusty photo album. And here's a little warning, if you have children around, maybe not let them hear this part of the episode. Okay, you've been warned. Go ahead, put your headphones on. Let's hear what Javier has to say.
And when we opened that photo album, they were like private pornographic photographs. A collection of private pornographic photographs from who knows what, from the 60s and the 70s, but hundreds, 300 pages with 10 photos, thousands of the one better than the other. It was like fucking incredible what we had there. So we said, okay, let's put one on eBay. At the time, eBay had what they call mature audiences. You had to log in, blah, blah, blah. Right now, with censorship, it's gone. You cannot do that anymore. But at the time, there was a niche there, and it was... And then we started like selling them, and they were going for $200-$300. And we used to just post the photo and create stories. You know, if it was a lady with red hair, red-headed lady, you know, getting fucked in that type of. So the name of the account was Paul Brother. That was the name of my pornography. It was a porn juggler. Smut.
That is absolutely not the story I was expecting to hear behind the name. But now that he's explained it, it makes total sense. At first, my mind had went to Pulp Fiction. No, not the movie Pulp Fiction. I mean actual Pulp Fiction. Those cheap, mass-produced, low-quality stories. They published them in these pulp magazines between the 1890s and the 1950s. They're often very graphic and sensational. So yeah, pulp ties perfectly into the smutty Polaroids they were selling. But let's think of pulp in the context of Javier's art. Not only does he frequently explore sexual themes, he also paints on mass-produced plywood, an accessible, affordable material. When you consider it that way, Pulp Brother really is the perfect name.
So when I open Instagram, we try, okay, how about a name? Mayoral Javier, oh, it's taken. Javier Mayoral is taken. Javier Mayoral Artist, blah, blah. No, that sounds horrible. I said, okay, Paul Brother. And then they did Paul Brother and available. And I said, okay, Paul Brother it is, that's it.
And from that moment on, Javier became Paul Brother. At the beginning of this episode, I told you that Javier is now 63 years old. Now, you know the full story of his journey, a long and winding path to becoming a full-time artist. Javier once believed that dream would never come true, that it just wasn't in the cards for him. But today, he spends his day doing exactly what he loves.
This is not work, man. This is, some people, they said, oh my God, Javier, you're painting your life away. I said, yes. Yeah, that's, I can't find any, that's what I get up at 6 in the morning, grab my car, and at 6:15, I'm on the beach. The sunrises here are spectacular in the morning. Nobody on the beach. It's me. I have my friends, the homeless people sleeping on the beach, the fishermen, the guy with the metal detector getting, rings and coins in the morning. I do 2 miles. There's like a buoy that I swim to and then come back, do my yoga and stuff, which I call it yoga, but it's not. I just stretch. And take a shower down there on the beach. We had showers, so I take my gel and stuff. Go to the supermarket if I need to, and then come home, have breakfast, get on Tumblr to get inspiration, to get ideas, to see, because I use a lot of reference for my paintings. And yeah, decide what I want to paint, and yes, paint until 3 or 4. And yeah, and then just relax, listen to music. If somebody comes over or the family, I don't go out too much. I used to, but not anymore. That's pretty much what we do. We like to, you know, have a glass of wine and just listen to music. We had an amazing record collection. It's my wife. It's like, yeah. And yeah, very, and the pandemic was a life changing thing in lots of sense, because we used to have a lot of friends coming over and going to houses and going out. And because of the pandemic, I realized that, oh my God, I don't have to find excuses why I'm not going out, because nobody's going out. So, and I guess after the pandemic was over, I'm very comfortable living like this. So, yeah.
Watching the sun rise over the beach, painting whatever you want, whenever you want, and relaxing with your partner. Honestly, I can't think of anything that could top that. Now that being a full-time artist is your reality, how does it feel to finally be here?
Oh, God, it's, I knock on wood every morning. It's like, yeah, because, yeah, it's, yeah. And then I see friends that are artists, very talented, and they are like struggling, and I don't know. But again, it took me all my life. It took me all my life to get to this point. Yeah. And again, I thought for a while I was never, I said, you're going to be, Javier, you're going to be cooking for the rest of your life and selling paintings on eBay for $50, $100. That's the reality that I had. And I was like, you know, it's not that bad of a plan, you know, at least I don't have to punch in, you know, I was cooking, that it's very creative, and I was painting. So I have people pulling me from left to right with projects and stuff. Yeah, I'm going to, I go to London very often to, I have a, you know, I don't like to talk about things that happen, but there's a project with a really, really big company that they are. The only thing is, I don't want to sell my soul to the devil, you know, if they can do it. In fact, they disappear for almost a year when they realized that I wasn't doing what they wanted me to. But I guess they thought about it, and they are, okay, yeah, we are back, and we're going to do it your way. So, yeah, it's my way, or, you know, and again, it's, that's how I do it. And
Javier has always done things his way, or not at all. From starting his own creative design studio, to dropping everything and moving to New York, to working his way into a private chef gig, and finally becoming the artist he was always meant to be, he didn't follow some grand master plan. Instead, he follows his heart. He continues to follow it today, painting what he wants to paint, when he wants to paint it, telling the stories he feels he should be telling. And what incredible stories they are. When I sat down to record with Javier, I had no idea how incredible our conversation would be. I was literally on the edge of my seat the entire time. By the end of the call, my notebook was completely full of pages of notes, his life, his story, and so many more questions I wish I had time to ask him. I really hope that one day me and him can hop on another call or hang out in his studio and go through some more of his life. What an amazing guest to feature on the 50th episode of the podcast. 50 episodes. It's been quite a journey. It's been 2 years. Been countless hours of editing and writing and so many incredible artist stories that I've shared. This year has especially been exciting. We've gained so many new listeners, and we started doing limited edition prints on the website, and that's grown and helped grow the podcast, helped me buy a new microphone to improve audio and all of these things. And I couldn't thank you all enough, every single one of you who press play and listen to these episodes when they come out, and message me and tell me how you listen when you work, and how you relate to this episode, and how you're from the same area as this artist, and seeing them make it makes you feel like you can make it, and It's just incredible. I'm looking forward to another 50 episodes. I'm so excited to see who else we can get on the show, how amazing these other stories are going to be, and how many more people we can inspire. I'm about to finish editing this one and start editing the next one. So here's to getting one step closer to episode 100. Thank you so much, everyone. If, of course, you want to support the show, please share it with everyone you know. Thank you so much. I will see you in the next one.